This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio. Today, it's a pleasure to have in the studio with me the graphic novelist Marjane Satrapi. She's the author of Persepolis and Persepolis 2, and most recently of Embroideries. Marjane Satrapi, welcome to Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much.
How'd you decide to do graphic novels as opposed to a book of illustrations or a novel?
Well, you know, actually, a graphic novel is not a book of illustration, because a book of illustration is the illustration comes to illustrate what you have already written. In a graphic novel, the images are part of the narration that is also writing. Whatever you don't write, you draw, and whatever you don't draw, you write. So the form was obvious for me, because I think with the images, and it was like obvious, you know.
Have you always been someone who drew, a drawer, an artist, a cartoonist?
I have never been a cartoonist. I have drawn all my life. I have made art studies, but comics is a completely different topic. And so I was even not reading so much comics. It happened that I ended up in a studio in Paris where all the cartoonists, they were there. And so probably I wanted to make them like my friends. And then suddenly it happened that I realized that it was really for me the way to express myself. So,
did anyone have a profound influence on you, or did it just come to you?
No, I mean, influence, you know, it would be unfair if I say I have one influence. Of course, when I read Art Spiegelman Mouse, that was like, oh, because like everybody else, I thought that comics, they were comic. And I understood that you could treat other subjects in this form. But at the same time, you know, I have more of a general culture, and my influences, they come from everything. So, you know, this I'm not really someone from a culture of comic.
Then tell me, Marjane Satrapi, the compulsion to write the two first books, Persepolis, Persepolis 2, on Iran and the experience of the Iranian Revolution. What was that felt need?
Well, actually, this was not suddenly that happened either. You know, I was just going on saying this story since ever. You know, the first time I left Iran, that was in 1984. And a couple of years before that, I was out of Iran also with my parents, you know. I traveled lots of time out of Iran. And, you know, until 1979, we were considered as, you know, as like little bit of the country of fairy tale. That was the 1001 night. We had a king, we had a queen, we had lots of oil, and everybody loved us. And, you know, we were like, you know, these main characters in 1001 night. Then suddenly it happened that after 1979, suddenly this whole 1001 night people, they became terrorists. And so everybody hated them. So I kept on, you know, trying to make understand to people that even in a democracy, you know, the government doesn't represent all the people of the country. Does George Bush represent all the Americans? Thanks God, not. So then in a country like mine, which is even not called a democracy, it's called a dictatorship. The meaning of dictatorship is in the same word. It's dictating. That means using force. So that means that they are not representing the people at all. So we cannot be judged by our government. But it seemed that this very obvious thing that I was saying was extremely hard for people to believe. And so the second time I left Iran, that was in 94. And again, you know, I had to explain that it was not like this, you know, because people, you know, just a silly movie like Never Without My Daughter, you know, it's an American production. They have pulled this cute Sally Field playing the role of Betty Mahmoudi, who is not cute at all. And they have made out of Iran, you know, people that are sitting on the ground eating like animals, barking almost instead of talking. And so a movie, a shit movie like that has made much more harm to my country than any article against us. So, you know, you have to fight all of that at every second of your life, because I cannot listen to stupid thing and shut up and say, okay, it's this way. I cannot give up. So for me, writing this book, that was like talking once and for all, that I would say, okay, this is the way it was, and now read the book, and, you know, And that was the need of writing. It is just not going over and over and over and over and telling the story for forever.
Well, it certainly does defy stereotypes, the Persepolis book, and it is enlightening on what actually was happening there. For me, one of the most troubling and must have been terribly disheartening facts of the Iranian Revolution was just the tide of fundamentalism that swept in minutes after, it seems, the hope of liberation, you know, had come upon people.
Well, but you have to put that in a, you know, in a historical context. You know, in 1951, the Iranian, they were the first country in the whole Middle East that nationalized their oil. As a result, America, they made an embargo. And 2 years after, in 53, they made a coup d'etat. And not only they completely destroyed the dream of democracy in Iran, but in the whole region, because after this nationalizing the oil in Iran, that was when the Suez Canal became national. All the Arab countries, they were starting to nationalize their oil. But Iran was the leader in that. Okay. So 26 years later, we, instead of spreading our democracy in the region, we spread it a fanatic movement. And why this can, that was a fanatic movement? Because all the force of the opposition in countries like Iran, like Afghanistan, like Iraq, they were leftist. And we were, the Berlin Wall was still there. And the closest neighbor, that was USSR. So all the opposition, they were very close to USSR. They were, because they were communist and socialist. So the Westerner, they, instead of helping these people to do something, they were behind all the religious movement, believing that the religion will be much, you know, much more friendlier to them than communism. I mean, no kidding that, you know, I mean, the Taliban, they have been supported by American. I mean, you can see many of these things.
And the Shah was brutal in repressing left-wing movements.
Absolutely. I mean, Shah killed lots of people, and that was the CIA who created the Savak in Iran. You know, so all of that is very much related. So then people, they shouldn't be very surprised why it was a hostage-taking. I mean, Iran at the Shah of time was being ruling by American. From the second American, they made the coup d'etat in Iran, you know, the whole oil industry was in their hand, you know. They were everywhere. So, of course, people, you never want your country to be ruled by foreigners. So this hostage-taking, that was the result of more than 20 years of presence of American in the country.
And yet many Americans, you know, this constant refrain that we've heard over and over again since 9/11, why do they hate us? Why do they hate us? As if the United States just appeared, you know, in pristine form on the face of the earth yesterday.
Well, you know, I mean, when the American government, they say we and the rest of the world, if you consider that the rest of the world is a big toilet that you can go and defect exactly wherever you want, these are people, and they have a reaction. You cannot say, I am proud of being American and not want me to say I am proud of being Iranian. You cannot say, I love my country and not want me to say I love my country. I mean, if the word dignity, pride, love of the country exists, it exists for all the nations. It's not something just for the Americans. It's for everybody. So would someone in America would like that a foreign country comes, they bomb you, they tell you, you know, your government is not right. We are going to teach you how to be civilized, and we are going to teach you how to live. And they come and they shoot on you, and they kill every day 200-400 Americans everywhere in the street. Would American be happy? Of course not. So this is the same thing for us.
What do you think the chances are that George Bush is going to bomb Iran again?
Well, I don't think that is a loss of chances, because so far, you know, I mean, this war in Iraq and the weapon of mass destruction, they couldn't find anything. They are still in Iraq. The war was supposed to be finished after a week. That is more than 2 years. And every day that is 200 Iraqians that are dying. Every day that is American soldiers that are dying. They talk about democracy, but if American forces that get out of Iraq, it's completely chaos. It's completely chaos. So, you know, how are they going to attack Iran? Iran is much of a bigger country than Iraq. Iranians, they're extremely nationalist. We are 70 million. We are not 20 million. The country is not destroyed like Afghanistan. And, you know, I am someone, because of the book that I wrote, I even don't go back to my country. So nobody can accuse me, you know, to be the best friend of the Islamic Republic of Iran. But I can tell you something. If tomorrow America attack my country, no matter what it will be on the other side, I will be against America, because I don't want anyone to come and attack my country for a single reason. You know, democracy is not a wallpaper that you glue on the wall and suddenly you have democracy. Democracy is not a gift that you give to someone by bombing them. Democracy doesn't happen over the night. Democracy is a social evolution, is a social acquisition. The first thing for the democracy is that you shouldn't have a patriarchal culture. When you look at the election in Afghanistan, they ask for the, from the lady, "Oh, lady, are you going to vote?" She say, "My husband doesn't want me to vote, so I'm not going to vote." So in which kind, what, about what democracy are we talking really? So in Iran, the culture of people, they has changed a lot. You know, today, you know, we have 2 students out of 3 in this country that are women. So, you know, we are fighting in our way, the patriarchal culture, but it's up to us to make the democracy. And it's up to a foreign country to understand what we are doing and to support this liberating movement within the country, not to come put and bomb us. Just to tell you an example, Iraqi opposition, they were living in Europe since 30 years. Who listened to them? Where have they been invited? When Saddam attacked Iran in 1980, all the Western country, Europe and America, everybody was behind Saddam. Saddam bombed us with chemical bombs. Okay. Nobody said anything. That was not against, you know, the Convention of Geneva. And everybody was behind Saddam, and he was attacking us.
That's because Washington was behind him at the time.
Exactly. And as a result, you know, this war made more than 1 million death people, Iraqian and Iranian altogether. For me, that's not Iranian. They are not better than Iraqian. All of us, we died, which is the biggest war after Korean War in the modern history. That was the biggest war that happened. Who talked about that? Never. So, I mean, how come that this Saddam, suddenly he became so bad? If we want to make democracy by making war, then let's go and attack Saudi Arabia. Then let's go and attack Pakistan, who everybody knows they have supported Taliban everywhere. Let's go attack China. It's a big country. They don't respect the human rights 1 second. How is it the United States of America, they're still best friend with this Wahhabi Saudi Arabia? How is it they're still best friend with Pakistan that owns the nuclear weapon, that are selling it everywhere, and they're real Islamists? And how is it that they're investing billions of dollars in China? If they're going to make democracy, then come on, make war to 80% of the countries in the world. Because 80% of the countries in the world that are present in United Nations, they're dictatorship.
You've been listening to Marjan Satrapi. She's the author of Persepolis and Persepolis 2, most recently Embroideries. The program you're listening to is Progressive Radio. I'm Matt Rothschild. I'm the editor at the Progressive Magazine. Now, you are a pacifist. You are against war. You're not suggesting that the United States or any other country, for that matter, go attack Saudi Arabia or China or Kuwait, for that matter. You talked about patriarchal countries. Kuwait recently said it wasn't going to let women vote even in municipal elections. Tell me why you think the patriarchal dominance in countries is so antithetical to democracy.
Patriarchal dominance, of course, because, you know, if you take the family as a small society, in a small society, when you say the father is the leader and whatever he decide is the decision for the whole family, and nobody has the right to drink or sleep or eat or whatever without the decision of the father, then you can make that in a bigger scale on a society. So the first thing, if you want to have a democracy, men and women, they have been considered as equal. Because from the second that you don't consider half of the society equal to the other half of the society, here is the first bad step towards democracy. Because in democracy, men and women, human beings should be equal. And like that, if you even don't respect that, how can you respect the freedom of speech? How can you respect the freedom of thinking? How can you respect any other kind of freedom if you don't consider that human beings, they are equal? So I think this is that's what I'm telling. Democracy is an evolution. It takes time. You have in Iran, many feministic movement, many humanistic movement, many movement for human rights, many things that are happening. And by supporting this movement, you can make it that it will be a deep change. Because, of course, you know, you can say, okay, I will put you a democratic, you know, government. It stays 3 years, 4 years, 5 years, but it's extremely unstable. The smallest blow and it's gone. A democracy should be something solid. And for it to be solid, that is the people of this society, has this special society that has to construct it. Just take the example of Europe. The Swedish democracy, the French democracy, and the Italian democracy, they are not the same at all. They are three different kind of democracy. And nobody say, okay, you should have my democracy. I mean, why is it that we should have American democracy? We will have a democracy. People, they are fighting for that. People, they went to jail for that. So bombing a country like Iran is destroying all of that and is putting back Iran 50 years behind again.
Bush speaks sometimes of Iran as though it's just one huge, dark dictatorship with none of these forces of democracy underneath that you've been talking about, the feminist forces, democracy forces, human rights forces. And to the extent that he recognizes that there's any agitation, he tries to put himself in league with those people who are opposing the fundamentalist regime. And yet that must be like the kiss of death for the people in Iran who are trying to make change there. I mean, they don't want to be affiliated with
But, you know, people of Iran, they want the thing to change. The alternative is to have George Bush coming and bomb us. I mean, why? And, I mean, if you talk about, you know, nuclear weapon, nobody in the world has to have nuclear weapon. And so far, United States of America, the government, who is giving moral lesson to everyone, I should remind them that they are the only country that have used this nuclear weapon in the history of human being. So come on, nobody has to have nuclear weapon. It's not just a question of Iran and Kuwait and this and that. We have to start taking all the nuclear weapon out, because if you are not going to use them, why having them at all?
And yet Bush is bullying Iran on this nuclear issue, of course, and saying that Iran must dismantle all of its nuclear equipment and this, that, and the other thing. But at the same time, the United States is, as you're suggesting, adhering to its own nuclear arsenal of 10,000 weapons and lets its ally Israel have a couple hundred. And so that kind of hypocrisy just must stick in the throat of people. How is the United States perceived in Iran, though you haven't been there for a while, or in Paris, where you're living now?
Well, at the same time, you know, I mean, it's, for me, it's a difference between United States of America and the government of United States of America. For example, me, personally, myself, I love American people. I love to be in America. I think this country is really great. I love it.
What do you love about it?
But I love it because I think Americans, they're the most cute people I know in the world, you know. There's something about their enthusiasm, about, you know, the way they are. I love this country, really. And I think American people, you know, when they are good, they're better than anyone. But when they get bad, they're nastier than anyone also. You know, you have the two sides. But the good Americans, you know, I mean, I really like this country. But then comes the American government. And, well, of course, I don't think that anybody who is sane in his brain can accept that.
Were you surprised that Bush won, that the American people voted for Bush in November?
You know, first of all, I have lots of doubt because I was here, you know, during all the campaign and all of that. I don't know what has happened with all this voting machine and all of that. I mean, God knows, you know, the first time he was not elected and he got elected anyway. So the second time, I don't know. And also they have been so much talking about the security and I mean, they have made believe American people that Iraq was the fifth biggest army in the whole world. I mean, when I heard that, I saw that once in TV, I was like, a country with 20 million people, that half of them, they're starving. You know, they're half dead. They even don't have an airplane. The fifth biggest army in the world. I mean, what a joke. And they made people swallow that. We are attacked. We are going to be attacked by Iraq. I mean, and what about Bin Laden? Why nobody talks about him anymore? Probably he is in George Bush ranch somewhere, I'm sure.
Down in Crawford, you think?
I'm sure, he's making, he's driving some glider and, be with his family and all of that. I'm sure, the two families, they have been so close. So, and what can you say, the fact that there is that support of American people, they're ignorant. I can understand. The country is huge. It's like 20, 30 country in which, and if you're only interested in that, it's fine. I can understand that. But if you are ignorant, it's better not to put your nose in other people's problem. Because to decide for the other one, at least you have to know who they are.
I'm speaking with Marjan Satrapi. She's the author of Persepolis and Persepolis 2, and also of Embroideries, Persepolis and Persepolis 2, travel the arc of the Iranian Revolution in a very idiosyncratic way. Embroideries is a bit of a departure. Tell me about that.
But it's not a real departure because actually here in the United States it's published after Persepolis 2. In reality, I wrote this book between the two Persepolis because, of course, in these two Persepolis, I was trying to show another point of view, which is not, I don't say this is the point of view. This is my point of view. I'm talking in my name and not in the name of all the Iranians. This is how I saw the things. And then I remembered all this very long afternoon when I was spending with my grandmother and her friends and my mother and her friends and this whole family of all the generations, everybody sitting together. And, of course, the discussion turns towards sex. And, this is the part of the thing that I cannot write in Persepolis because Persepolis has a very specific goal. So this is why I wrote Embroideries.
And there is some continuity between the two. I know in Persepolis 2, when you are in Europe and you meet up with some other Iranian women and you start talking about dates that you've been on and then you tell them that you've had some experiences and then all of a sudden you're called a slut by them or something because you're not a virgin or you've slept with more than one man or something. So that seems to be a theme that recurs here in Embroideries.
Well, this is the patriarchal culture again. I mean, the situation in Iran has changed a lot. I should say that. I mean, 15 years ago, imagining a boy and a girl out of marriage living together, that was impossible. Today, I know personally many people that they live with their boyfriend and all of that. And we have also to know that the situation in Iran in general has changed. I mean, during 20 years, Iranian women, they have lost every year a third of an inch of the veil, and they have gained about a third of an inch of
so these
hair.
Advances aren't well known at all here in the United
Absolutely.
States.
I mean, if you go now in Iran, people, they have very tight clothes, very short, and, the veil is almost nothing in a city like Tehran. But, of course, they wouldn't tell you because if they tell you, then suddenly we will become like you, and then it will be much harder to kill us, when we will be another species of animal, then it's much easier to kill us. So, of course, this virginity is for me one of the symbol of this patriarchal culture in which, since your wife it makes part of what belongs to you out of your land and your house and your car and your wife, then, nobody else, she should be first hand and nobody else has used her before.
And this cult of the virgin is not something that is exclusive to Islamic fundamentalism by any means.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. It goes very much, with the feudalistic culture of earning the land and earning the house and earning your wife. And it has been like that also, in Christian countries. But something very funny is that, for example, Iranian mullah, they are legalizing the abortion in Iran. And in the United States, they talk about illegalizing abortion. So it's funny that a fundamentalist Islamic regime is legalizing an issue like abortion, and a big secular democracy like America, if you talk about abortion, is like if you were talking about, if you were a killer or something.
Would you say the United States is more fundamentalist than Iran?
I wouldn't say so. But I would say that George Bush is using the same terminology as the mullahs. When the mullah, they say, read the Quran, he said, read the Bible. I am with God. God is with me. God is with them too. The Iranian, they said, we are going to fight the Satan. And they said, we are going to fight the ISIS of evil. But listen, the Iranian mullah, they are fundamentalists. Everybody knows that. The American government is supposed to be the biggest secular democracy in the world. That is when it becomes absolutely scary, because they are not supposed to say that, you see?
Bush says God speaks through him. That was a direct quote he gave on the campaign trail. I couldn't do my job unless I knew that God speaks through me.
Well, I think that he has taken too much acid when he was young.
I'm speaking with Marjan Satrapi. She's the author of Persepolis and Persepolis 2, and also of Embroideries.
One thing that, you know, we shouldn't forget is that, you know, we talk a lot about the veil of the Muslim country, etc., etc. I think in a general way, that is a problem with the image of the woman. When in a country like mine, they try to hide the women by putting a veil by force on their head. In a country like United States or in the whole Europe, you know, they try to make the woman naked to sell no matter what. I mean, to respect a woman as an identity, as a human being, there is a problem, and in the West and in East. Why is it that every time, you know, they sell, I don't know, car, orange juice, whatever, they have to show a naked woman? Why is it that the society here forces all of us to have big breasts and make plastic surgery and look like this and look like that? I think this is another kind of veil. And we, you know, in my country is the law. I mean, if you don't put the veil on, you go to the prison. And the women of here, they shouldn't forget neither. That is another kind of dictatorship. And maybe we have to consider ourselves, start considering ourselves as human being. Men, women, hermaphrodite, whatever. People of all the ages and all the sexes and whatever. We are just human beings, and it shouldn't be any problem with anybody's image.
How important is the effort to not make the veil compulsory? Do you think that's a crucial issue to wage in a country like Iran?
Listen, the veil is just a symbol. You know, I ask this question many times to people. Do you think that if the Iranian women, they take off their scarf, is Iran going to be a democracy? Of course not. The main discussion is the freedom of speech, the freedom of thinking, the day we would have the right to say whatever we want, we will be able to wear whatever we want. But it's not the contrary. It's not because you can wear whatever you want that you can say whatever you want.
Now, you say you left Iran in 1984 and in 1994.
Yes.
Were those under your own free will, or did you have to get out?
No. In 1984, that was my parents who decided for me. I was a child. I was 14 only. And in 1994, that was my decision because, you know, I wanted to be an artist. And at this point, I didn't see any issue. But Iranian young artists, they have done so many magnificent things in this country. And they have, you know, they have gained a lot of rights. We don't have to forget that.
And now you say you can't go back, or you would find it uncomfortable to go back?
I will find it uncomfortable. You know, Iran is not a state of law, really. Everything can change any second. So I rather not go now.
Unfortunately, we're out of time. It's been delightful talking with you, Marjan Satrapi. She is the author of Persepolis, Persepolis 2, and also Embroideries, three books I highly recommend, graphic novels. Fascinating to read. The show is Progressive Radio.
Thank you very much.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by Mufa. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.